Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's the pink season, October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And everything from ribbons to sneakers to the NFL and the White House is going pink. We're walking and shopping and tackling, all to raise awareness, raise funding, and maybe find a cure. Is it great? Is it too much? Too much cheer? Too much sexy around cancer or not? This hour on Point, Breast Cancer Awareness and the Pinking of America. Later in the hour, we'll hear from a top oncologist on how breast cancer research has progressed and where it's headed. You can't avoid pink this month, all over the place, all over pro football, among other things. Here's a spot that aired on an NFL broadcast last month. It's got Elizabeth Hasselbeck, co-host of The View, wife of former NFL quarterback Tim Hasselbeck, praising the league and the multinational corporation Procter & Gamble for bringing awareness to breast cancer. Here's her mother-in-law, Betsy Hasselbeck, followed by Elizabeth.
You'll see the boys on the field wearing a pink chin strap or pink wristbands or pink shoes. That's all to honor women who struggle with breast cancer.
This is a powerful program, and you take something like the NFL and its Crucial Catch campaign, and you partner that with P&G and do something beautiful. It's about as good as it gets.
As good as it gets. And here's NFL quarterbacks Mark Sanchez, New York Jets, Eli Manning, New York Giants. They teamed up with breast cancer survivors for a Pepsi ad campaign this fall.
For Pepsi to invite me today and for them to partner with this kind of initiative to help women affected by breast cancer and cancer survivors, it shows more than just our partnership, that it transcends football.
Obviously, a cancer survivor is going through a battle that it's hard for me to understand. You know, if someone hasn't done it, but obviously their strength, their attitude, they're staying positive.
We're going to look at this from a lot of angles today, but joining me first from New York City is Natasha Singer, reporter for the New York Times. She's been writing big on just how big breast cancer pink has become. Natasha Singer, welcome to On Point. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So give us a sense of the scale of pink now. It seems everywhere you look this month, I mean, the White House is lit up in pink, football stadiums, forget about it, products, there's just no end to the number that are pink. How do you sort of put a line around this?
Well, you know, I'm a reporter in the business section, and we did a cover story in the Sunday business section mm-hmm. that we called The Pinking of America, precisely because the business of fundraising, merchandising, and marketing of breast cancer has become a multi-billion dollar business.
That's pretty gigantic. What's the range of appearances here in terms of the economic appearances of pink?
Well, we focused on Susan G. Komen, which is a breast cancer foundation that is the biggest mm-hmm. among the fundraising groups in the United States. And they raised, in fiscal 2011, raised close to $500 million, and they spend a lot of it on promoting mammography, breast cancer awareness campaigns.
Right.
They also spend it on funding research into the causes and treatment of breast cancer, and they also spend it to address healthcare disparities. That is, you know, are there low-income demographic groups that are not getting mammograms, or they are getting them but they're not following up, or they're diagnosed and not treated, or they start treatment and stop? Can we save lives by addressing healthcare disparities?
Natasha, I have to say, that all sounds like pretty fantastic stuff. I mean, who's going to argue with any of that?
Well, I think that there are two central questions here, which we looked at in the story,
mm-hmm.
of the business of pink. And it's, you know, we called it big pink. It's like big pharma or big oil. There are detractors, and the questions are, from the moral point of view, first, is it unseemly? Is it patronizing, infantilizing? Is it to turn breast cancer into a shopping opportunity? And the second question is, from the medical point of view, is all this pink a distraction that maintains the status quo, which is telling women to have mammograms, that does not kind of in an overall way benefit the advance of research and treatment of this disease?
Though Komen, just for one, does invest in research, not just in awareness, as important as that may be, as you say.
Well, one of the criticisms is actually they spend twice as much on education as they do on research. And shouldn't we be spending all the money trying to figure out what causes breast cancer and then how to treat it? And, you know, because while we're telling everybody to get mammograms, we're getting a much higher incidence of breast cancer. But we're finding many more small tumors and precancers. And still 40,000 women in the United States and 450 men die of breast cancer. So with all this mammography promotion, we're actually not making progress on treating the most aggressive cancers.
Would you talk about you talked about, you know, potentially turning this into a kind of patronizing shopping opportunity. We'll have listeners who have seen plenty of that, and others who just may not be in that world. If you're out in the retail world where pink might show up, just how does it get applied, and how does that,
I think there's sort of pink everywhere. You mentioned the National Football League, which has a pink promotion with the American Cancer Society.
Mm-hmm.
Old Navy is selling pink T-shirts for Komen this month. KitchenAid has a program called Cook for the Cure, where if you buy pink blenders or mixers, money goes to breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Estee Lauder's executive Evelyn Lauder started her own foundation in 1992, the Breast Cancer Research Foundation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So Estee Lauder sells some products, a percentage of which goes to that foundation. Hard Rock Cafe has a promotion this month called Pinktober, where they're selling pink products. So there's pink everything. There are pink sneakers. There are pink car tires. There are pink, you know, beer pong tables. There are pink tasers. But the question is, you know, how much money is going to the charity, and from the charity, how much money is actually going to do good? And are we better off writing a check directly to your local cancer center for treatment or to a local research center? Or, you know, are you never going to write that check? So you're in Bloomingdale's and you can buy an object and $15 will go to a breast cancer foundation.
So I guess
it depends you are.
Yeah. This question of how much goes to the charities and how much to the work is really important here. Otherwise, you're turning a disease and the color that's come to stand for sort of awareness of it into a kind of a marketing gimmick. So what about the numbers? Does the money go to...
I think there's two things. One is, it is a marketing gimmick. It turns breast cancer into a kind of festive occasion, and it makes it palatable. It makes it seem safe. And because Komen and others have made it seem so safe, major corporations want to partner with them to sell stuff because it makes you feel good.
But are they at least getting the money to the research?
On the economic side, 5 to 10% of a product traditionally goes to a foundation, although there are some people that sell pink stuff and no money goes to a foundation, so if you're a consumer, you should check. But one thing I did want to say was these foundations, you know, like Komen and there's also Avon, have events. They have walkathons. Komen has Race for the Cure.
Oh, yeah.
And millions of people participate, and it actually has the effect of creating communities for people either who have breast cancer or are family members. And from an emotional point of view, for a lot of people, it does a lot of good.
I've seen that. I've seen that at work. It is really powerful. People, tears in their eyes here at the community.
Extremely powerful. So for a lot of people, it's a positive experience, and they don't like any criticism. Criticizing it is called pink bashing. And from the scientific point of view, there are a lot of reasonable questions about concretely how much good is being done. And they believe that people who promote breast cancer awareness are pink washers who are trying to make us think mammography is safe, breast cancer is safe, all you need to do is get a mammogram, we've solved this problem. So there are arguments on each side.
Tell us about, let's see, it was Susan, of course, it's named after Susan G. Komen. It's her sister, Nancy Brinker, who's chief executive here. Now, she's really driven this thing. What's her background? She saw her sister die. She promised her sister on her deathbed she would work to find a cure for breast cancer.
Right.
And she has really poured herself into this effort, into this pink effort.
Yes. So, you know, in the United States, we didn't talk about breast cancer in public until about 1974 when First Lady Betty Ford came out and said that she had breast cancer, she'd had surgery, she had a mastectomy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a few years after that, Susan G. Komen, who was a mother of two in Peoria, was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she later died, and her sister, Nancy Brinker, determined that she was going to start this foundation to try to prevent that from happening to anybody else. And it was a small foundation when she started it in 1982, but she had been a sales trainee at Neiman Marcus, the department store, and she had learned all these things about marketing, like the customer's always right and keep selling and keep changing the merchandise, and you've got to create a positive environment if you want customers. And she applied that marketing thinking to starting Komen, and she decided that they had to sort of have a happy spin on breast cancer and focus on surviving to try to get attention. And so she started a race in 1983.
Yep.
About 800 people came. And now they have 147 races a year. 1.7 million people attend. It raises $120 million.
That's a lot of love, a lot of walking, a lot of money for cancer. She learned some of this from her husband, Norman Brinker. You describe him, restaurant entrepreneur, started chains like Bennigan's, took Chili's public, made a lot of money,
so,
just sort of marching things out.
She learned franchising, right? Because you started Chili's in one city, and then you open it somewhere else. So you start a Komen chapter in one city, and they do a race, and then you replicate that concept in cities across across the United States, and now they're starting to replicate that in cities all around the world.
You know, Natasha, I hope you'll stick with us for a minute here, because on the one hand, you've got some people now pushing back, some people with breast cancer saying, all this pink is kind of overwhelming me. On the other, you've got so much love and care and research and awareness that's been built here. It's hard to be too critical of something like that, Natasha.
There are arguments on each side, and we tried to do a very fair and balanced story that laid out both sides.
Though last year they had, the KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, buckets for the cure, pink buckets of KFC chicken. Some people said, hey, here's a sign of when things just go too far. That's been, I suppose you could link it to calories, i.e. obesity, and obesity to breast cancer.
You know, I actually think there's a larger question here, which is that actually heart disease kills more women in the United States a year than breast cancer, and lung cancer kills more women than breast cancer. So we've made breast cancer, with all this pinking, the central disease we focus on, when in fact there are other diseases that don't get attention because they're not pink.
Natasha Singer, reporter for the Sunday Business section in the New York Times, is with us for big story, The Pinking of America. Natasha, please stick with us, if you would. We're talking about the pink season. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the pink season, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and whether the pink campaign is great or has maybe gone too far. Here's one of the largest breast cancer foundations, Susan G. Komen, for The Cure. Raises money for research and treatment through walkathons, pink products, and ads like this one that promote a pink community.
We had a pink day at work. We turned our whole community passionately pink.
I rode 12,000 miles on my motorcycle.
Every person can make an impact.
Together we are united against breast cancer.
And that sounds darn good. In an interview in early October with MSNBC's Andrea Mitchell, Nancy Brinker, founder of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation, said there's more to their campaign than the color pink, and they plan to spread awareness of the breast cancer fight all over the world.
The reason we do this is not just because we like to dress up in pink and have a lot of pink ribbons, but it puts it in front of the American consciousness and, frankly, the global consciousness, because it's the way we go in this country is often the way it is in other countries, and now we're reaching people all over the world, particularly in low-resource countries where we're teaching them the dangers of the disease and also how to detect it early.
Hard to argue with that. That's Nancy Brinker, founder of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation. Natasha Singer is with us, reporter for the Sunday Business section in the New York Times, been writing big on the pinking of America. With us now as well from Washington is Marissa Renee Lee. She's founder of The Pink Agenda. It's an advocacy group for raising money for breast cancer care and research and awareness of the disease among young Americans. Marissa Renee Lee, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
Also with us from Berkeley, California, is Karuna Jagger, executive director of the Breast Cancer Action. It's a national breast cancer foundation. It does not work with corporations that they think may profit from pink ribbon campaigns. Karuna Jagger, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Marissa, you have a tough personal story, like many who have devoted a lot to this directly in your life. You came to this young after your mother died young from breast cancer. What brought you to get involved with the Pink Agenda, Marissa, to found it?
Thanks, Tom. So my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer the week that I was graduating from college. I decided after 4 years of fun and parties and doing my own thing, I'd go home and try and spend some time with my parents and help them manage this incredibly challenging transition. She was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. She did not have a great outlook, and she already had multiple sclerosis at the time.
Boy,
so.
Yeah.
Spent that year at home being a very type A and a little bit crazy daughter, helping her, you know, manage everything that was going on. When she stabilized, I moved to New York and was working and having a good time with my friends and going home every weekend and helping to take care of mom. And I realized one day, you know, I barely passed college bio. I wasn't going to be a doctor. I wasn't going to be a researcher. But I can get people together to throw parties and raise money for breast cancer. So the whole point of the Pink Agenda is just focusing on younger Americans who we feel, even with all of the pinking that you see during October and at other times of the year, we just think that they are largely unengaged and underutilized in this fight. And breast cancer is one of many great causes. And if young people start giving at 25 and do so for the next 25 years, you really see the impact.
And so, you're teaming up to do that. You have with Google, the Green Bay Packers, beauty companies, Pink Rosé, wine companies, Bacardi,
yes.
Bacardi Rum. How do you feel about these partnerships? You know, what's the point?
So our take on partnerships has been twofold. We're an all-volunteer organization, so anything that we can do to move the needle in terms of outreach and advocacy to other young Americans, mm-hmm. we'll take the opportunity. And then the other piece is obviously the funding. You can only do so much as an all-volunteer group of young professionals who have other full-time jobs. So if we see an opportunity to do something that we think matches our demographic and is going to help us raise money and raise awareness, we'll do it. And when it came to, you know, partnerships like the one that we had with Martini and Rossi, we made sure that every advertisement, whether it was in a store or online or anywhere else, noted that alcohol consumption should only be done in moderation.
Mm-hmm.
And we also consistently push for a very high percentage of proceeds, and we typically receive a minimum donation as well. So all in, it's been a positive experience for us. And at the end of the day, you can't get a bunch of young professionals to a party without cocktails.
Karuna Jagger, your group is very focused on breast cancer and a big sense of the issue, the problem, and working on it. But you're kind of ambivalent about pink at this point. Why?
Yeah, so Breast Cancer Action has been around for 20 years, and we were founded by a group of really outspoken activist women who were in a metastatic breast cancer group who really were wanting to bring patients into the picture. And so our work is very much to put patients before profit. In 2002, we launched a project called Think Before You Pink in response to our growing concerns about the overwhelming number of pink ribbon products and promotions on the market. And this campaign calls for more transparency and accountability by companies which are taking part in breast cancer fundraising and really encourages consumers to ask critical questions about pink ribbon promotions. At the end of the day, there's no question that the pink ribbon has had a role in bringing breast cancer out of the shadows, but now it is blinding us to the real issues. The pink ribbon, which began as a means, has almost become the ends. It's almost as if the pink ribbon is replacing women living with breast cancer. And we think that this pink noise is blinding us again to the real issues.
And the real issues you want to see pointed to that may be blinded,
sure.
Like what?
So the pink ribbon oversimplifies. And I think Natasha's article did a great job of really demonstrating the ways in which some of these campaigns put a cheerful face on breast cancer. And, you know, Marissa, I'm extremely sorry to hear about your loss with your mother. And I think your story, you know, you began to talk about the ugly realities of breast cancer. And, you know, we have a slogan, you know, cancer sucks. And I think this is a big part of really recognizing that, you know, the pink ribbon sort of feminine, pretty, soft cheer belies the real truth of breast cancer, which is that it is an ugly, ugly disease. A lot of the focus of pink ribbons are on awareness, and a real emphasis tends to be on mammography. Well, we say we want to stop breast cancer before it starts. Mammography does not stop breast cancer. Mammography detects it after it has already occurred. Even women who have annual screenings, there was a new study that came out that 21% of the breast cancers that were diagnosed were already late stage. Mm. And so what we know is mammography is not the answer. Mammography misses breast cancers. Women who have breast cancers detected in an early stage may still sadly end up getting metastatic disease and dying. Even women who are getting annual mammography may be diagnosed with late stage disease. Mm-hmm. Mammography cannot be the answer. We have to stop. It's a tool. It's a piece of the picture, but it's not the answer. And we need to focus on stopping breast cancer before it starts. I think you began this session really talking mm-hmm. about the role of cause marketing. And we have a campaign that is really designed to unveil pink washers and really illuminate, you know, the where profits take over and again replace patients. We define pink washers as those organizations and companies which are profiting from affiliating with breast cancer. That is, they're selling pink ribbon products. We know that this is extremely successful. You know, I would hazard to say that the pink ribbon is one of the most successful marketing campaigns of the 20th century. Companies who brand themselves as caring about breast cancer build a loyal customer base who buy more products. Our question is, what are those companies doing to make sure that their products are not contributing to the epidemic? Mm-hmm. And that's where we want to see companies which are affiliating with breast cancer really step up and take it to the next place.
Well, look at that. Natasha Singer, there's quite a gap between, you know, sort of the community and caring of pink, almost like a pretty in pink community versus cancer sucks. Those are two very different approaches to managing public perceptions of a disease, I guess, Natasha.
Well, I think from a business perspective, it's very hard to sell cancer sucks. So Karuna makes a great point, which is if you're actually talking about the reality of breast cancer, that isn't very attractive to marketers. And that's why pink has been so successful, because it puts this gloss on it that makes people feel safe. On the one hand, it makes people feel maybe safer to talk about it. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But it also makes it much safer and desirable for corporations to get involved. And the question at the end of the day is, how much good is this doing? And for every group that is getting behind this, where is their money going? And is it doing good? Is it perpetuating the status quo? I mean, one of the things that was interesting for me is that I didn't actually understand what Komen did. I saw a lot of pink. Mm-hmm. I knew there was a lot of promotion of mammography, mm-hmm. but I didn't know what they did. And I went to Dallas, where they're headquartered, for 2 days, and mm-hmm. I met every executive in charge of different spheres. And, you know, some of the things they're doing, they decided a few years ago that they were spending a lot of money on research, but they were giving out a lot of small grants that weren't amounting to enough. And they decided that they were going to focus on giving $5 to $7.5 million grants over the long term, you know, 3 to 5 years, to actually try to A, prevent breast cancer deaths, and okay. B, reduce the number of people dying from breast cancer. So they have seriously retooled their research arm. Second of all, they are also spending money on disparities. And what disparities means is, for example, Dr. Otis Brawley is the chief medical officer of the American Cancer Society. Mm-hmm. He also works at Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta, which is one of the sort of most low-income demographic patients in the country.
Okay.
At least once a year, he gets a woman who comes in whose breast has fallen off. And that is because she's had breast cancer yeah. for years. It's been a lump. It grew bigger and bigger until the breast cut itself off.
Yeah.
And what Komen is trying to do with their disparities program is actually market mammography and treatment to those people who are not in the system. They're also doing this blanket marketing that you can really question. Do we really need more awareness? But actually, if you look at what they're doing, there's some real concrete good. And I think that that's the issue. There's this big gap between people saying, oh, pink is really great. It makes us feel good. We're doing good. We're raising money. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Corporations are getting way more out of this than patients. But in between, look exactly at the group you're giving money to and what they're doing. And some of them are doing both this pink stuff that you may or may not like and actually some concrete good.
Natasha, stand by. Marissa, I want to come to you. Let me get a couple of callers first. There are so many here. Debbie in Lincoln, Massachusetts. Debbie, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Debbie Dorsey. I was diagnosed with invasive ductal carcinoma. Breast cancer, mm-hmm. as otherwise known,
mm-hmm. yeah.
14 years ago, and it'll be October 23rd. I went through chemo, I went through radiation, I've been surgery, I've been, you know, the whole gamut.
We're glad you're with us right now, Debbie. We're glad you're here. What do you think? You're
still
here. What do you think?
What I think about the whole thing, I think that it's absolutely fascinating because, you know, the pink thing has a double-edged sword. One, I think it's good in a way that there's so much pink, because what I've been seeing is that a lot of younger women are taking breast cancer more seriously. They were saying, oh, this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month and
yep.
stuff. The other side of it is my concern is that I think before you buy anything, I've just been listening to what everybody's saying. Sorry, I forget your names. But before you buy something, you really need to know where that money is going. And if you really do want to write a check, make sure you know where that. I mean, to me personally, I was treated as Dana-Farber. And I would write the check to Dana-Farber if I had the money.
Send it straight to the research organization. Debbie, I appreciate your call, and I'm so glad that you are here and sounding so robust to make it. We're talking about the pinking of America. Marissa, let me swing it back around to you. We're getting this whole range of support here, appreciation for the good work that goes on, but also this concern about glossing up, maybe, in all the pink trappings, a pretty rough disease. What do you say to that concern, Marissa?
I think that there needs to be a balanced approach. And I also want to thank Debbie for calling in. It's great that she is still here with us. And we actually do help fund a researcher who's based out of Dana-Farber Cancer Center. So I'm glad that she's thinking about writing a check to them. She should absolutely do it. On the pink agenda side, it's actually funny to hear Karuna mention breast cancer sucks or cancer sucks, because that is the beginning of my story on our about page on our website. You know, I know that it sucks. I know that it sucks to not have my mom around at Christmas. I know that it sucks for my dad to have to try and figure out how to navigate the dating landscape when the last time he went on a date with someone who wasn't my mother was when he was 14. And I think that there needs to be a balance between giving people the facts and all of the information. And it isn't just about mammograms. It's about a comprehensive approach to figuring out how we both close the disparities gap and how we do a better job of making sure that, you know, no one has to deal with the side effects of breast cancer that me and my family have to deal with. And at the Pink Agenda, we've found companies to partner with who have been responsible in terms of how they market these products. We don't spend any money to market the products on their behalf. We're able to raise a lot of funding. And, you know, at the end of the day, fundraising is a self-regulated industry for the most part. And I think that raising the awareness on the consumer side that not all pink products are created equal is probably the best approach here.
Natasha, I've just got you for another minute. What's your sense of all of this? Has it peaked? I mean, you got the White House lit up in pink now. You've got the football games and everything else. Are we seeing kind of the peak of something, Natasha? What's your guess?
My guess is that this is an annual event, just like Halloween in October, and it's not going anywhere.
And just as pink as it can be, right on out, as far as the eye can see.
I think we're only seeing more pink. I mean, you've got pink yogurt lids. This year, Eggland's Best, an egg company, is printing pink ribbons on every eggshell. So I think we're seeing proliferation still.
Is there a point at which you think the business people involved in this will just walk away because every marketing, you know, thing has a lifetime?
I think as long as companies are profiting from this, and they're profiting in two ways. One is they are making income on these millions of dollars worth of pink stuff they're selling. But second of all, the goodwill that is engendered by this creates increased brand loyalty over a lifetime. And as long as women are feeling really good about the company because they're associated with breast cancers, companies will continue to do this.
Natasha Singer, reporter with the New York Times Sunday Business section there. She's written big on this and very well. Natasha, we appreciate your time with us today.
Tom, thanks so much for having me. Take care.
This is Ray Lavender with Pretty in Pink. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
You're pretty in pink.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the pink season, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We are right in the middle of it. And whether the big pink campaign is great, fantastic, terrific, or maybe has gone a little too far, in this hour we're going to hear from a top oncologist about where the research on breast cancer actually stands today. We're at 800-423-TALK. All kinds of response online here. You know, we've got people who are saying, oh, Lisa says, you know, as a breast cancer survivor, it's important to me to find the funny, I guess, in all this. So I've teamed up with two other survivors, and they've got a kind of comedy about breast cancer. It's called the Mama Logs Pink Ribbon Overdose
characters poke fun at all the ridiculous things that are pink ribbon these days, but in a loving way. She says we can hopefully help our fellow survivors heal by looking for laughs in unlikely places. Susan says, as a breast cancer survivor, I approach October with mounting anxiety, anger even each year, as the pink craze grow, the final straw grows. Final straw this year was my local newspaper, printed entirely on pink paper. You've got people saying yes, people saying no. Here, Meg says, I wish the following, that everything in America was not always prey to commercialism, but more importantly, we need to look at some fundamental causes like pervasive pesticides and chemicals in our food, water, and air. Kathleen's calling from Milton, Massachusetts. Kathleen, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm a breast cancer survivor. I was first diagnosed 13 years ago. I calculated it up. I told your screener it was 10, but time flies.
Oh, yeah. Glad you're here.
At the time, I had a 4-year-old son.
Oh.
And, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I have to say, the diagnosis is terrifying, and it does suck. Mm-hmm. I felt like when you're first diagnosed, you're terrified. I felt like a tomato that was rotting from the inside. Mm-hmm. People who knew about it, I felt they were looking at me like I was contagious, like I might spread something. It was an awful feeling, kind of like leprosy of old.
So as pink, the pink campaign helped you?
The pink that I saw mm-hmm. at that time, a little bit of pink, mm-hmm. helped me. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think the pink movement helps a lot of us who are going through this. There's something like a feeling of people who are becoming aware there is some good that's happening, but to the person who's going through it, it almost feels like people are with you. The other day, I walked into the living room, into the TV room, saw my husband watching a football game.
Yeah.
It took my breath away. There were these men.
That sea of pink.
It helps me. It does.
Kathleen, we've got it, and I really appreciate that. And I mean, it is visually arresting. I can see how it would feel like a great big hug right there. Let me get another, if I may. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Paul. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking this call.
Yes.
The whole campaign, the breast cancer campaign, I find offensive.
Why?
Well, I lost a wife to colon cancer just 2 months ago.
I'm sorry, Paul.
And I think that donations to cancer should go to fighting the disease. And I realize it's multiple types of diseases that manifest themselves in multiple types of ways with
yes.
multiple types of potential cures
yeah.
or treatments.
Yeah.
I think that the concentration of money should go to that, not to one specific type, and certainly not to any corporations making some money off of this, selling pink ribbons, pink jerseys to the football teams or pink socks or whatever else they're doing. Get the money to the American Cancer Society. Let the American Cancer Society distribute it as it sees fit, not only in research, but also in grants to help people with chemotherapy and what have you.
And right across the spectrum. And I can only imagine how you must be feeling that now, Paul. And I'm sorry about the loss of your wife, but I appreciate your perspective today. And if I may, let me get one more. We'll come to our guest, Boca Raton, Florida. Eric is calling. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Tom, hi. How are you?
Okay.
I have a question. My concern is that this pink campaign is, one, being kind of twisted by corporations that actually pinkwash themselves for their own good. And the other thing I'm kind of concerned about is this race to the cure stuff, I happen to think, is just going to end up creating a pharmacological, profit-driven pill that women will then just have to buy to give it stuff. I more want to know, why can't we actually work instead of a cure on a prevention? And one of the things that I actually came across on this whole campaign, and mm-hmm. I don't really have any family members that are affected by this as mm-hmm. far as I know so mm-hmm. far, but I came around from the backside about this from light pollution. I was studying light pollution, and I discovered that it has a health effect upon people, especially women, especially breast cancer. The problem is that light itself is not exactly directly the problem. It's our biological reaction at night to the light that is the problem.
Wow.
Light.
So
light,
I mean,
is a biological triggering input
yeah, yeah.
that cascades subtle health improving functions that should naturally and nightly occur in our bodies.
So maybe pink is looking for cure or coma is looking for cure. Maybe we need to back up and look at the whole environment. Eric, I appreciate your call. Karuna Jagger, let me come to you in Berkeley. If you could take all the energy that we see in the pink, and we have to say honestly, the caring and love that's there, but also the dollars, And you'd like to redirect it. Where would you direct all of that energy, that focus, Karuna?
That's right, Tom. We all want to end breast cancer. And Breast Cancer Action, for a long time, we've said our goal is to put ourselves out of business. And there's no question that too many women are diagnosed and too many women are dying. Today, we do need to take it to the next level. Imagine if those resources that we're talking about, if all that money, if all that brain power, if all those resources are directed to the systemic issues which get at the root causes of breast cancer.
Do you mean environment by that or systemic? What do you mean?
I mean a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Definitely we're talking about the environment. The fact of the matter is that a majority of breast cancers, that is more than half of all breast cancers, have no known risk factor associated with them. And so, you know, one of the first things people say to me when they tell me about somebody who was diagnosed is, and there wasn't even a family history. Well, the truth is a mere 5 to 10% of breast cancers have any hereditary links. And so, you know, it would be actually a surprise if there were a family history. If you include lifestyle factors, so that's weight, exercise, alcohol consumption, still we're talking about maybe, you know, so hereditary and lifestyle factors, we're talking about maybe 30 to 50% of all breast cancers. That leaves more than half of all breast cancers unexplained. There's increasing body of scientific evidence that points to a lot of environmental toxins and exposures that we're getting in our day-to-day lives. Some of this stuff, folks, individual people are taking steps to keep themselves and their family safe, buying mm-hmm. organic, buying natural beauty products, those kinds of things. But we say we need to lift the burden off of individuals and put it back in our regulatory system for two reasons. One is because the exposures that we're getting in our day-to-day lives, which are involuntary, that is to say, that come through our air, our water, our food, in ways that we can't control with our consumption, those are the majority of our body burden of toxins.
So why not take the pink energy, Karuna, if I may, why not take all this pink energy and love and care and money and attention and turn it toward those issues?
That would be great. So here's what my issue is. When you see a garbage truck painted pink, what is that doing for breast cancer? When you see a garbage can, when you see a pink oil rig, when you see companies which are selling products which are linked to the disease itself, what is that doing to end the epidemic?
Marissa, and so, I've got to go to Marissa. We just got a minute left here with you both. Marissa Renee Lee, what about it? Can you take all this energy and turn it to the issues that are most important in tackling cancer, breast cancer?
I think in an ideal world, that would be phenomenal. And in an ideal world, my mom would still be alive. But I think if we're going to be realistic about what we can do, and, you know, I think that Karuna's work is very important. I think the work we're doing with the Pink Agenda is very important as well. But they're different goals. And our goal is simply to make sure that we have younger women engaged in these conversations and thinking about some of these preventative measures that Karuna mentioned and giving money to the cause, because there are women who are suffering now who we can help support. And there's research that we can help fund now. And that's just where we feel our time is best spent at this point. I do think it would be great to increase consumer awareness around these campaigns.
Well, we're trying to do a little bit of that right here today in a kind of big meta way, and the two of you have helped us do that. We're going to take a moment here before the end of the show to look at the state of breast cancer research, where that stands right now from the medical perspective. Marissa Renee Lee with the Pink Agenda joining us from Washington. Thank you, Marissa. And Karuna Jagger, Executive Director of Breast Cancer Action, joining us from Berkeley, California. Karuna, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
In a moment, the state of breast cancer research. This is On Point. More than 40,000 women still die from breast cancer every year in this country. So where does the research stand? Joining me now from Miami, Florida, is Dr. Mark Pegram, Professor of Medicine and Director of the Translational Research Program at the Brayman Breast Cancer Research Institute at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine, a pioneer in targeted cancer therapeutics. Dr. Mark Pegram, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be with you.
So we've been talking about all these issues, and we know it goes all the way from huge environmental issues down to the kind of research that you're doing. I mean, big picture, where does this stand? Have we made progress on breast cancer mortality, first of all? Is a lower percentage of women dying of breast cancer once they've got it or not?
Absolutely. We're making inroads, finally, in mortality in breast cancer. In fact, there's been a 1.7% annual reduction in mortality in breast cancer in this country since 1992. And in the past decade, breast cancer mortality in the European Union has fallen by approximately 10%, about 9.8%. So, you know, you can be critical and say that this isn't enough, and it's clearly not. You know, our mission is to eradicate the disease. But we are making substantial inroads. It's important to recognize that breast cancer is not just one disease. It's a collection of many different syndromes. And therefore, we have to appreciate that it's going to require a personalized medical approach, perhaps even to each individual, and in this fashion sort of eke away at the disease and chip away at it. And we're doing exactly that. And over time, this will make substantial inroads on reduction in mortality.
When you talk about eradicating the disease, you're a physician, but do you see the greatest opportunity or challenge as treatment or the environment in the first place that many presume is causing cancer?
Well, we need both approaches. You know, there's not going to be a single solution to this problem. This is a public health problem. It's multifaceted. We have enormous opportunities in developing improvements in prevention, in early detection, which clearly saves lives, understanding genetic predisposition, better diagnostic tools with the advent of new molecular diagnostic techniques, which helps us refine and better categorize the disease and personalize treatments, and then finally new drug therapies. I mean, we're working on new non-chemo approaches, really for the first time just in the past 10 years or so in breast cancer research. And many of the most promising agents now are associated with no hair loss, no nausea, vomiting, no drops in the white blood counts or infections, these types of things. So we're really poised now for the first time to make major inroads in all of these aspects. It's not just going to be one approach, though. It's going to require a concerted effort, and it has to be a collaborative effort and an interdisciplinary effort across multiple sciences.
If you look 5-10 years down the road, do you think chemo is on the way out, or is that always going to be, well, some people will need it and some people may not?
It's very definitely on the way out. You know, for example, there was a new diagnostic test that came on, you know, commercially just in the past 5 years or so, that allows us to better select patients who benefit from chemo versus those who don't. So, for example, in women who have newly diagnosed breast cancer that hasn't spread to the lymph nodes, that are hormonally sensitive tumors, in that population, we've reduced the use of chemo in this country by about 40%. So we're able to select patients where we know the chemo is not going to be effective, and we can just eliminate it from that group. So that's a fantastic major accomplishment just in the past few years. It's still going to be around in 5 or 10 years. There are clearly a fraction of patients that benefit, but what we need are better diagnostic tools to be able to identify the patients who exactly need it, who have a curative potential as a result of it, and treat just those patients. In the past, we were relegated to just treating everybody the same because we didn't understand the disease. You know, we tried a one-size-fits-all chemo approach for the better part of the last quarter century, and that simply didn't work. And now we understand at a very fundamental level that the reason is there are different subtypes of the disease with different molecular alterations, and those are now becoming actionable. We can come up with new diagnostics, new therapeutics, better detection methods aimed specifically at the genes that are mutated and causing the disease.
What about mammograms, Dr. Pegram? There's been a lot of controversy and sort of debate in the last few years here on mammograms and whether or not women should get them. I'm looking at a headline just today that says, you know, women who get annual mammogram, half of them will at some point get a false alarm. Where do you stand on mammograms? Do you see and how they ought to be used?
I think the dust is finally settling on this issue. As you know, there was some controversy just a few years ago based on a publication in the literature based on some modeling considerations and cost-benefit analysis, et cetera. But, you know, it's very clear that mammograms allow earlier diagnosis. They're not perfect, and we need better technology, and this is where research can have a big impact. We need to get to the next level beyond mammography, clearly. But for the time being, it's still a very important component of public health. It clearly causes an earlier diagnosis at a point where the disease is much more likely to be cured. And so it is an important component of public health. And, you know, we see in our hospitals here in Miami, the minority and underserved population who don't routinely have access to mammographic screening. And the tumors we diagnose in the city hospital here at Jackson Memorial in Miami are multiple centimeters in size and usually spread to the lymph nodes, whereas at the private hospitals in Miami that have intensive mammographic screening efforts underway, most of the time we diagnose breast cancers that are less than 1 centimeter and haven't spread to the lymph nodes at all. And so it makes a clear impact on early detection, which facilitates better treatments.
You're deep in the treatment and the research. We've been talking about the pink campaign. We've just got 30 seconds here, Doctor. But what do you think about all the pink in October in this country? On balance, a good thing or distraction?
October is really like our pledge drive, you know. And sure, there's a certain amount of familiarity and sometimes even fatigue that may happen, but it's extremely important. You know, I was gratified to see, flipping the channels over the weekend, some of the NFL football teams, the Dallas Cowboys, for example, were wearing pink tennis shoes and gloves. And I think that's really important because it increases awareness. Clearly, the disease has touched individuals in these organizations.
And they're responding in pink. Dr. Mark Pigram with the Brahmin Breast Cancer Research Institute, University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. Thanks for being with us. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.